Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today we're going to share with you some new stuff, or at least it's stuff that's new to us.
Right. I mean, some people would say Malaysian cooking's been around for a very long time.
But the
appointment of a Malaysian food ambassador
to the U.S.
Now that was news. That is news, and you'll be talking to her. You'll be listening to her later in the program. But leading off, a fascinating young. Well, when we say young, undoubtedly much younger than we are.
A duo. Well, we don't know. Have
developed a business almost by accident. And in Venice, California, starting out with a tiny corner of a farmer's market, they've created a market for themselves for some very innovative spices and salts. And they have an interesting name to go along with that called Gustus Vitae, so why don't we listen to what they have to say?
Well, it's certainly a good thing that I've studied Latin, because this company that we're going to be talking to is called Gustus Vitae, which means,
taste of life.
Right. And drink it deeply, I guess, right?
Yeah, and in our case, I guess spice it abundantly.
That's great. So we're talking to Vanessa Lengies and Frankie Scanlon, who are the team running this Gustus Vitae. And you specialize in gourmet herbs and salts, and also, if I read it all correctly, salt-free combinations of herbs. Is that about it?
Go ahead. We just said it at the same time.
That's all right.
We started our kind of company at the Venice Beach Farmers Market, and our kind of idea, we both love to travel and we love to cook, and our idea was to make blends using local ingredients that kind of tasted like places that we've been fortunate enough to travel to, and also to places that we haven't gotten to go to yet but enjoy. So kind of the idea is that we're trying to kind of make it easy to, you know, create an authentic meal that tastes, you know, Jamaican or Tuscan or French or Chinese. Starting at the Venice Farmers Market, we're so lucky to have such an abundance of great local produce all around us here in California.
I mean, I think it's a great idea, because no matter how many cooking shows people watch on TV, it's not necessarily in everybody's blood to get these flavors put together properly. So you do all the hard work.
Precisely. And we've also made it convenient for everyone to have all of these flavors at their fingertips at home, because we've put magnets on the back of all of our spice tins. So basically our hope was that you could put them on your fridge or your oven or your microwave or your barbecue and see all of the spice blends that you have. And that way, any day of the week, you could be cooking green beans every day, but every day you could have green beans from cuisine around the world.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. So it was kind of, our mission was to make it easier for people to make simple dishes more complex and obviously more diverse in their kitchens at home. And so we don't specialize in individual herbs. You won't find, you know, Gustus Vitae thyme. We kind of specialize in blends. So each of our is a different blend from a different place. And then of course we have our salt-free blend, and then our salt specialty salts, which are delicious. They're more like finishing salts.
Yeah.
We have a smoked one and a red cayenne one to make it spicy, and they're great.
Well, now I'm still at a dead loss as to how you two got together and how you're different. Both of your backgrounds are different from what you're doing. How you developed this expertise in this kind of product line?
Frankie has been cooking for a really long time. He's very talented. I mean, the things he comes up with blow my mind, and it's one of the biggest reasons that I completely fell head over heels in love with him.
Huh?
And I had been living in Venice for a really long time, so these spice blends kind of started for our friends. And it kind of derived from Frankie not being able to find what he wanted as far as spice blends at the grocery store. So he started kind of making them and making them for friends. And then I had, from living in Venice for as long as I had lived there, had a good relationship with the man, Jim, who runs the farmer's market. Uh-huh. It's very hard to get into the farmer's market, especially with its growing popularity nowadays. People are much more likely to shop at the farmer's market.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just called in a favor and I said, Jim, you know, I've been shopping here, spending my money here for 8 years now. You better let us have a little booth. And so he did. He gave us a tiny little corner booth where we could start to see if this was something that, you know, people would really want. And it turned out that people really wanted it, so much so that we're in Whole Foods now and Albertsons and Southern Seasons, and we're getting distribution all over the country. And, of course, we sell online. That's our number one place that we get our spices out is through our website, goosesvitae.com, and Amazon.com. We're a Prime. You can order us on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, let's spell Gustus Vitae. GustusVitae.com. And you can order online, which is great. And they are in the Whole Foods, which is also great.
Which is also great.
Yeah. Reading about the farmer's market in Chicago, and on a nice summer day, they get 10,000 visitors. I mean, it's really a hot place to be, yeah. How do you study these profiles? Do you analyze the compositions of the flavors yourself?
Like, how do you put together
Florence, for example? Do you have
Florence? I would say I think our favorite one is, just to kind of give you an example about how we do it, our favorite is the Taste of California. And so that's strawberries, dried strawberries, dried lemon peel, cilantro, and thyme. And we kind of came about that because we were kind of inventing all these different profiles, and we thought it's strange that when you think of California, there's not really one kind of taste you associate with it in the way that maybe jerk, you know, defines Jamaican cuisine or Chinese five spice, you know, could say represent Chinese cuisine. And so we just kind of think about, you know, what are the different herbs and spices and flavors that we associate with these cuisines. And, you know, we get to have a lot of fun with it. We kind of play around in the kitchen and experiment and put things together. And then we both love to cook and you know, have dinner parties and share them with our friends. And we'll say, hey, what does this taste like to you? You know, being at the farmer's market, part of what was so great about that was that we got, you know, the freedom to experiment and really interact, you know, directly with people and kind of tweak the formulas like that. So, you know, we're really excited now to be able to share kind of these profiles with a larger audience.
Now, I think that it's the sheet with the individual tins of the herb mixes, right?
Yeah, they're all magnetic, and we sell a number of gift sets. They're really nice, you know, kind of host or host.
Oh, yeah, I think they're great. I found out Bed Bath & Beyond has magnetic tins.
Uh-oh.
So you can add to... you know, you can add to the convenience of your collection, and you could do your whole refrigerator with it.
Right. I mean, I think it's having them magnetic is just a really it's a really fun and convenient way to store them. And you know, we're just, you know, we want people to cook more. So you know, whether they're using our spices or you know, someone else's, really what we want is people to just kind of, you know, rediscover the joy of cooking and make that as easy as we can for people.
Now here's a test for you tonight. We're having swordfish belly, seared swordfish belly. What's the spice combination you're going to recommend for that?
I would say the Thai spice that we have. It's one of our salt free varieties, and it's kind of like a green curry. So what I would do is just kind of rub some of that on to kind of blacken it a little bit, and then if you have some yogurt, could mix that Thai spice with the yogurt and just have a really lovely sauce. That
nice.
Oh, there you go. So creating a sauce at the same time.
Correct.
You've obviously done this before.
we're really happy to, you know, to have friends who let us experiment with them and cook different things. And so we have a lot of fun with it.
But do you ever use the Flavor Bible?
I have not used the Flavor Bible, no.
It has sections where they combine all these different flavors and then the uses for each one of them.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's really a classic.
Was it Andrew Dornan, isn't it?
Yeah.
Andrew Dornan and his partner is
his wife,
female, I don't remember her name. But if you look, our website has it. So if you go to our website, go to OTM Bookshelf, you'll be able to find it there. And then
we'll go check it out.
And then you can click.
Yeah, we definitely will.
Then you can click through to Amazon, and you'll get a copy. It's really handy if you're just sort of thinking, you know, I have oregano in far too many recipes. What can I use instead?
Right.
I sense that that's probably one of the dangers that you face. So this would help kind of keep you out of that mess.
That's right.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, it's fun. So are you keeping your day jobs, both of you? Or are you past that now?
Frankie works full-time on Gustav's Vitae, and whenever I have an acting job come up, I'll go and film that. And then every day that I'm not acting, I work on the company with him. Okay. I designed all the labels, and now we're about to try to break into my home country of Canada, so I'm going to have to make all the labels bilingual in French and English, so that's my next project.
You're sure going to have some small print, I think.
Yeah. Where in Canada are you from?
I was born in Montreal and raised in a little town called Hudson.
Okay. Well, we just got back from the Taste of Toronto.
Oh, it's nice.
So you'll have to make up some kind of a
blend.
We'll
have to make a spice for the Taste of Toronto. That's very funny.
Yeah, well, I guess right now we had lobster poutine and we had pulled pork poutine. Poutine is, delicious. I guess, viewed as the national dish, right?
Poutine is the dish of Quebec, I know, but I don't know about, I didn't know that other provinces were kind of riding on the back
of that. It's big all over.
Oh, it's making a huge impact in Toronto right now, which doesn't have the Quebecois very happy at all.
No, I'm sure it doesn't.
I sense an international incident very soon.
Now, what's your next big hurdle? Then you're obviously getting out and about.
Our next big hurdle is kind of expanding the company from the two of us. We wanted to do something that we could make with our hands, that we could rely on each other and kind of keep it simple and keep it a fun thing for the two of us to do together. Mm-hmm. And the next hurdle will be, how are we going to expand this and invite more people to the party, I guess.
Well, I'm sure you'll figure it out just as you came up with this really wonderful idea. You're going to make everybody an accomplished chef.
That's our goal.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and keep us in mind for your next level of business development.
Absolutely, and thank you both, too, and thanks for that great recommendation, and we can't wait to hear the show.
Okay, Vanessa.
Yes, thank you both very much. We're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, Frankie, and you'll talk to us soon, I'm sure. Okay, ciao, ciao, you guys.
Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Next up, we have, I guess it's sort of at the heart of America, chicken soup and also barbecue. And we found a combination, a very brilliant chef, Chef John Daugherty, who has cooked in many fancy kitchens, is now totally menu developing or I guess recipe developing for this operation. I mean, there's so many different products, we couldn't actually get a hold of all of them.
But the general label is chicken soup for the soul.
Chicken soup for the soul, but we're, I think, concentrating mainly on the barbecue sauces.
Well, that's what we've been trying, but he's got a whole array of stuff, including not just broths, but also the kind of sauce materials that you want to be able to make food taste really good. He's a fascinating story. He's absolutely dedicated to making sure that people can cook on their own and they'll be successful, because all they have to do is pull together a few ingredients and then the stuff that you can get from his organization. So it was really a very, very interesting conversation. Hang with it all the way through, because he just turns over new after new kind of item that if you have little time in the kitchen, you'll want to know all about and you'll want to try.
Chicken soup of the soul is, I think, a recognizable concept, but the way it's implemented that we're going to be talking about today is a little bit more complicated. We're talking to Chef John Daugherty, who developed all the menus and supervises all the food production as part of this chicken soup for the soul. John, you're best able to describe. I thought it was a literary venture, and it is that, but it's a lot more. So tell us about it.
Right. Well, the publishers, you know, in writing all their books, and actually their books consist of people like you and I writing in and telling our stories, and they put them together in books, and they're very inspirational, and so they've got quite a following. And it was really their readers that had been asking and suggesting that they do a line of food under the name of Chicken Soup for the Soul, because stories bring people so much comfort, and it made sense to them that to have some food just as comfort, because food can be very comforting to us.
Especially
and
chicken
so
soup.
The publishers decided to do that, and so they asked me a couple of years ago if I would help them develop the line, and off we went, and here we are today. We've come up with some great products.
Now, you, of course, have chicken soup, I imagine.
Yeah, we have chicken noodle soup. Yeah, we've got 8 different soups and 5 different broths and pasta sauces, and we've got meal-building sauces, sauces that you can create great dishes with, whether it be meatloaf. In fact, I just had that last night for dinner, which was great. We do a sloppy Joe sauce and a chili sauce. So really, all you do, all a person does, and the recipe's right on the jar, so you buy 2 pounds of ground beef or turkey, you brown it, add the sauce, simmer it for 14 minutes, and that's it. You've got a perfectly seasoned chili or a perfectly seasoned sloppy Joe. If it's meatloaf, you add half a cup of breadcrumbs and 3 eggs, mix it up, bake it for an hour, you've got a perfect meatloaf. So don't add salt, don't add it. You don't have to do anything. Just enjoy it.
That's really a help. Tell us about, now we were contacted about your line of barbecue sauces. Are these new?
Oh, yes, the barbecue sauces. And I'm having a lot of fun with those. I mean, I've got 4 different kinds. One is a classic, which is kind of smoky, big, bold, and smoky. Then I've got a chipotle bourbon, and there's the amount of the bourbon, you taste it right away, and it's real bourbon. It's not bourbon flavor, it's real bourbon. And the chipotle gives it a nice balance. And then there's a honey mustard, which is really good. And I'm not a big mustard fan, but you know, honey mustard sauces are very popular in this country. So I did a honey mustard barbecue sauce. So it's a little smoky with a nice balance of real honey and really good mustard, 2 kinds of mustard. And then we got a buffalo barbecue sauce, which is on the spicier side with a nice balance of sweet. And so these 4 profiles are great. I do them with ribs. I do it with chicken. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I bought a piece of brisket, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I wound up using our barbecue broth and the classic barbecue sauce, and I braised it for 3 hours, and it was perfect.
Wow.
I just browned the meat, added the broth and the sauce, put tin foil on it, baked it for 3 hours, and it was amazing. And I was able to make like 3 different meals out of that.
Now, you snuck in a different product there called broth.
Yes, we have 4 flavored broths.
Okay, so
that
Thai.
Very
so they're part of the meal builders aspect
that,
of it, I guess.
They're with the broth. So imagine our chicken broth is great. But here's my philosophy. A lot of people like to cook. A lot of people like to cook, don't have time to cook. And a lot of people like to cook, but don't really know how to make food taste great. So they shy away from it. So I figured if I could make broths that already have all the ingredients in there that you need to make something taste great, it would make things a lot easier. So we've got this Thai-flavored broth, with Thai curry, coconut milk, and ginger, and cilantro, and lime. And then there's we have an Italian-flavored broth with tomato, roasted garlic, and basil, and fennel that's outrageous. I've got a Southwestern that has nice cumin and cilantro, and it's got nice heat to it, and then a barbecue that's smoky. So these four flavored broths, and the idea is just get whatever meat and vegetables you like and cut them up, give them a quick saute, add the broth and some rice or pasta, raw pasta, and simmer for 14 minutes, and you've got a complete dish to go on the table. Dinner in 14 minutes.
Jeez. Now you have the background for this. We forgot to mention when we came on there that you were chefing for quite a while, and you got.
I was chefing for quite some time, yeah. But that's what helped me. Look, I was the chef at the Waldorf in New York for 23 years, and in that 23 years, yeah.
Good grief!
But good grief is right, boy. I got the gray hairs to show it. But the beautiful thing is, you know, we fed over a million people a year. And I really got to know what people like by all the different menus we had and, you know, all the different the trials and all the different things we tried, the special. I really got to know what people like and how they like to eat. And that really helped me in creating these products and the recipes for them and the formulas. And I know, look, myself, too, still working. I don't have time to come home and cook, so... But I don't want to be ordering takeout every night. I don't want to be going to a restaurant where I'm going to overeat or worse, go to fast food and eat stuff that's just not good for me. So I cook at home because I need to and I want to. I want to have good food. Not that I wouldn't rather sit down and watch a game or something. But, so these recipes, these products create such huge shortcuts. You don't have to get all the ingredients lined up to make food taste great, and you don't have to wonder, you don't have to follow a recipe, and you don't have to wonder how you're going to make it taste good. You just add it, and it is going to taste good.
Now, you actually buy these as separate items, though. You buy, so if you think you might need broth, you buy broth. If you think you might need a barbecue sauce, you buy that.
Yes, and honestly, what I do now, because I have access to all these products, when I go food shopping, I just grab all the vegetables that I like to eat, and I make sure I grab some chicken, I grab some beef, I grab some pork, and I have shrimp in the freezer, and that's it. And then I know that as long as I have these things in my house, along with these products, whether it be the meal builder sauce, or the barbecue sauce, or the broth, I can make anything. I can make a number of different things, and they all taste great.
But this has to have been a really major decision on your part to get move out of a kitchen and into a product development situation, especially where it was a total vacuum when you were stepping into it.
Well, I wasn't crazy about the idea because I never came across a product out on the shelf that was worth eating. Right? Everything I make is from scratch, and if I'm going to eat something, I'm going to make it myself or in my own kitchen with one of my chefs or something. So I wasn't interested in being involved in a commercially made product, but it wasn't until they gave me the commitment that they didn't want products like everything else, and they wanted to make things taste great, and they wanted me to use, you know, my recipes, and they wanted it to be the way I wanted it to be. There was a commitment there. And then working with the manufacturers, what I've learned is there isn't any reason why it can't be really great. There's no reason.
Yeah. Huh.
So there you have it. You taste it, you'll know. You'll see the difference. You'll taste the difference.
Well, now, how did you launch this as a product? I mean, everybody would go to your website for the what do you call it, sort of a self-help or emotional support situation. I mean, are those the people who eventually moved on to the food?
Well, the chicken, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to answer that question. I'm not sure I understand the question. But if you're looking for the products, if you don't find them in your local store, you can go on the website, chickensoup.com, and there's a food tab, and then there's a store locator, so it'll tell you where to store. And then you could also get them in Amazon, through Amazon if you want mail order.
No, I mean, I guess I just wondered, did they just have a special communications PR division
There's a marketing team, a PR marketing team. Yep. And a sales team. So the sales team has got to go out to the stores and sell the product. And sometimes I go with them and I'll actually make food for the managers and the corporate staff so that they can see what the product's all about and how it ends up. Mm-hmm. So we get their support and then they love it and they put it out in the store, and then there's the sales and marketing team, and right, it was the PR team that got me talking to you, and I'm not just talking to you, but to the public, and so we're getting the word out, and if all you got to do is try it once, and you'll be sold.
Okay.
Now, what's coming down? Anything coming down the pipe that you can tell us about?
There's things coming down the pipe, but I can't tell you about them. So,
okay.
That'll be released in time. But I've got some really, really great stuff on the back burner, waiting to be pulled to the front.
You're actually having fun thinking up new products and
I'm having a blast. I really am enjoying it. I really am, and I'm really enjoying making them. Exceeding the expectations of anything that we've had before. And it honestly just isn't, it's not that hard to do.
What is the secret to getting a commercially produced product that doesn't taste commercially produced? Then you said it's possible, but what is it that makes it?
I didn't pay you to ask that question, but it's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. You just put real ingredients in there, and you don't stretch it with water, and you don't stretch it with food-safe chemicals that stimulate our palate to make us think we're tasting things, but we're really not. So really, just really clean. Just put real food in there. And sometimes that costs a little more, but it doesn't cost that much more. Uh-huh. And, you know, the owners are committed to making it right. And if it costs a little more, so be it. They just want it to be right.
And how do you deal with this whole explosion of allergies? Everybody has an allergy now.
Yeah, you have to put it on the label. You have to make sure, and you have to work with companies that are sensitive. Certainly there are standards that they have to do, and you know, if they're making something that has an allergen in it, that there a certain process has to go through to clean and sanitize and really clean the equipment before the next recipe goes into it. And also things have to be on your labels, and people have allergies, they know what to look for.
So do you have a huge test kitchen and staff?
No, it's me.
You? Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah. There's a test kitchen at the office, but I probably do more of it here in my own home kitchen. And then once I get it to where I want it to be, then I'll bring it and do it in the office for everybody and get the votes and the thumbs up and the thumbs down and tweak it and get it to be just right. And then I go to Co-Packer, the company that's going to commercialize it and do it on a larger scale. They do test runs. And once I approve the test, because once you put it into a bottle and put it through the heat system, things change. So then you have to, you know, the garlic might get stronger, and the herb that you wanted, the basil, might fade away. So you've got to go back and make it a second time and make an adjustment and then make it right so that when it comes out, it's just right. You sign off on it. And then when it's time to do the big batch, I go there and I sign off on all the ingredients and I sign off on the final taste, and she's all set. And then I go on to the next item.
Well, I guess you've certainly had your own kind of learning curve with this, because they don't teach you at the CIA about manufacturing.
No, they don't. I've had a lot of fun learning about it, for sure. In the end, I've always trusted my palate. That's really my most valuable tool and asset, is my ability to taste and bring complexity. That's what everybody says when they taste these foods. They're so complex. There's layers of flavor. I start tasting this, but then I finish tasting that. And I think that's what makes food really interesting.
Well, I do too. So anyhow, I'm glad to have a chance to have all this straightened out for me, because I was a little confused, and it's good talking to you. And I'm glad you've made this big jump. And I hope you decide to go visit Ireland soon and get in touch with us, and we'll put you in touch with some of the wonderful chefs we know over there.
Oh, that's great. Got to get there. Thank you.
Thank you, John Daugherty.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. My kitchen would not be the same. I don't know about yours, but probably it's the same with yours, without a particular brand of kitchen equipment or gadget or whatever called Microplane. And we're going to be talking now to the director of domestic marketing for this particular brand, Microplane, which is a miracle, I think. I want to talk about the company, its history and growth, its 20th anniversary, and individual products. Let's listen to Tracy Parnas.
Tracy Parnas, welcome to On the Menu, and thank you from my grandchildren, myself, my wife, my son, and daughter-in-law, because I travel, unlike most people, I travel with my Microplane box grater, because it's the secret to making latkes for six or more people.
That's wonderful.
And it's amazing. I asked you just before we came on the air, I said, how can you still be in business? You have a lifetime guarantee on all your products. How are you going to sell any new ones? Well, the answer, of course, is the reason that you joined us today, because you have more inventive people at work coming up with more and more manifestations of graters, and that's what you're here to talk about. So welcome to On the Menu.
Thank you so much for having me,
Tracy.
And I love your story. Yes.
One other thing about the box grater is I fell so in love with how it looked when we got it. I had a dinner party and I used it as a centerpiece.
Oh, that's perfect.
Isn't that funny?
That is great.
Anyhow, here we are, and I bet there are people that do not even remember when Microplane didn't exist, but it's now 20 years. You're celebrating the 20th anniversary of when you moved your company into the kitchen business.
Right.
Now, give us a little history. What was it before?
Well, Microplane was and is still a wholly owned division of Grace Manufacturing. So we're owned by the Grace family. We're a relatively small company, but as you said, kind of a big brand that's revolutionized how we cook. But we started out by making very large print bands for, if you can remember back to the huge computers that took up a whole room. That's how Microplane started, with a really sharp etched blade to make those print marks. And the owner of the company saw printers getting smaller and smaller, and so he wanted to try to use the technology for something else that he was passionate about. And so he was a woodworker and just as a hobby, and took that etched print band and turned it into a woodworking tool, so the RAS, and started selling it, the woodworking tool, to small independent hardware stores, so like the Ace and True Values of the world. And back in 1994, one of our retailers, Lee Valley Hardware Store, located in Toronto, Canada, Mr. Lee's wife was making her favorite recipe, which was an Armenian orange cake, and she was just really frustrated by the results of her zester, and she grabbed her husband's woodworking tool and said, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so, you know, he kind of looked at her in disbelief, like, what are you doing? And she found that with his rasp, she created the lightest, fluffiest zest that she had ever experienced. And so they thought, oh, this is, you know, pretty cool. We're onto something. And they featured the Microplane woodworking rasp on the front cover of their hardware store catalog. And it kind of became a little phenomenon in Canada, so much so that it was picked up on by the New York Times here in the U.S. And our phone in Russellville, Arkansas, which if you've never been there, it's a very small town, located 90 miles northwest of Little Rock, and the likes of Julia Child and Martha Stewart and other, at that time, celebrity chefs started calling to find out how they could get this same tool, because they wanted to experience these results. And that's really how one passion fed into another passion, and catapulted Microplane into the kitchen. So it's kind of a crazy story, and I always say it's an urban legend, but it's all true, that this is how Microplane has become the Kleenex of graders, really just by an inventive and somewhat desperate housewife grabbing this kitchen tool and seeing that there had to be a better way. And since that time, we've continued to refine that technology and improve upon it, but really stayed very true to our core, which is making sharper cutting instruments.
Now, isn't it cute also to have as an ingredient a little bit of sawdust?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
You never thought about that, did you?
No, I didn't.
Maybe that's where the lightness came from.
Maybe that's why it tastes so good, yeah. Who knows?
But, Tracy, there are two things I want to talk about. One is you haven't just continued with the zester. I have the original, believe it or not, because I, too, was frustrated with zesters. And I have your very latest one, and it's markedly improved. All kinds of features have been added, such as a place where you could collect the zest, a little scraper where you can remove it, because that was always a little bit hairy, trying to get the...
Right.
Because if you ran your fingers down the wrong way, you're going to end up having a little additional liquid in your zest. But
that's true.
So you have dramatically improved even on this basic zester. Between there, you have expanded all of the range of implements. How did you go about identifying what directions you were going to take? Because I'm always fascinated with product development and diversification.
Yeah, and product development is really important and central to Microplane. Our founder, Richard Grace, his son is now the CEO of the company. They're engineers by trade, and so I think those of us, and we all know an engineer somewhere in our life, they're always tinkering, and how do we build a better mousetrap? And Microplane never set out to copy anybody, and we remain very true to that today, that the Grace family and Microplane is not interested in repeating what's already been done. It's making it better. And how do we make the lives of home cooks and chefs a little bit better? And so a lot of that is just trial and error. We do all of our own product development. We don't outsource any of that. So this, our sales and marketing team, as well as our customer service team, who directly speaks to consumers on a daily basis, we're all involved in that. As I said initially, Microplane is a really small company, so it gives us the ability to be very flexible. Now with social media, we get a lot of feedback from various social sites as to what people want and need. And the catch feature that you mentioned, which is now been incorporated into the zester, that was something that for really the past 3 years, we've been hearing consumers say, you know, wouldn't it be great if we had some sort of a collector? There would be less mess. There would be less waste involved. And we said, you know, that's a really great idea. And it seems like a very simple thing to incorporate a catch feature onto the back of a grater. But Microplane never really wants to do anything simple. It's what can we do that's simple and better? And so could that catch feature be dishwasher safe? Could it be translucent so that you could see what you're actually doing during the process? And you mentioned the swiper. That was another thing. Could we add a swiper so that we'd have an additional feature? So we don't bring a lot of products to the marketplace, unlike most companies in housewares, because, as I said, we develop all of our own products, so that's a very time-consuming endeavor. And it's also really important to us because the Microplane name is associated with everything that we do. And so we want consumers today to experience the same thing that you experienced 20 years ago when you're saying, wow, you know, where has this been all my life? So that same type of wow factor to continue, whether it be a new twist on an old grater, or we've kind of delved into some other more kitchen-y gadgets. For example, we just launched this year, really this month actually, a spiralizer to create those beautiful long strands.
Yeah, now why was that? Are people cooking with that? Because that surprised me, because it seemed to be more far afield than most of your new products. This is with the carrots and the parsnips and the, you know, and are people cooking with ribbons of stuff now. Is that it?
Right, and that's a trend that we've seen within cooking. And because I think Microplane is so well respected by professional chefs, we get a lot of feedback from chefs as well. And so with the trend to more healthy living and gluten-free diets, we were asked if we could come up with a spiralizer. And so we thought, okay, you know, we have these really sharp blades, and how can we leverage those into a different form of technology? And so that's really how that spiralizer came out. We also do have an office. Our U.S. office is based in Arkansas, and then we have a European office based in Hamburg, Germany. And our German counterparts have been telling us that they had seen this trend coming prior to it hitting the U.S. So we have the benefit of having eyes and ears around the globe to be able to share different cooking styles and new applications for our technology from various parts of the world. So
Now I'm looking at a vegan messer pure salade crouter, a herb and salad chopper. It's also known as a picador de yebo ensalada. Guess what, listeners? That's a herb and salad chopper. And I have it in my hand, and it looks like it would be good for chopping fingers off, too.
Tell us about that. Careful. Is this a trend that you needed to pursue?
Yeah. Initially, once we had kind of developed a full line of graters, so we went from the rasp to a paddle line of graters, we were being asked for what could we do with herbs. And so 3 years ago, we launched a tool called an herb mill, which looks like a lot like a pepper grinder, and had a lot of success with that. But there were some limitations to the types of herbs that were appropriate for the mill. You needed more leafy herbs, and it wasn't as good with coarser herbs, so like basil or rosemary.
Rosemary in particular.
And so we were asked, you know, what can you do that would cut these types of herbs? And so we developed the Urban Salad Chopper, which is more of an herb mezzaluna, and so that can go through those coarser herbs with a simple rocking back and forth motion, the same super sharp microplane blades, and you're absolutely right, you do need to be careful when your fingers are around them. But that same tool, as we were doing our testing on herbs, started to see this growing trend in the domestic market of chopped salads. So that's a great tool for using not only with lettuce, but also with kale. It can be used with garlic and nuts. And then we always try to incorporate some sort of safety feature into all of our items. For example, our zesters are all sold with a reusable cover so that you protect your fingers while the item's in the drawer. The herb mezzaluna has a retractable blade with the same thought process in mind, that you want to keep that blade sharp so you don't want it to be exposed when it's not in use, and you also want to protect your fingers when it's in a drawer and could come into contact with small children or somebody like myself who tends to be fairly clumsy in the kitchen. So we have a retractable blade on them.
Yeah, the mezzaluna, you know, is a redo of a very old idea, because our grandmothers all had them. Still remember the mezzaluna and the wooden bowl for chopping stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And so with that item, as I said, what our simple twist on that was that retractable blade, and the fact that you don't need to use a special board to rock your mezzaluna back and forth. A simple cutting board will do.
Yeah, so we had to use a bowl with the old style.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, here's the latest thing. Here's the successor to my box grater. It's called a cube grater. And yeah, it's a cube grater.
It's very cute.
With a little three. I'm not quite sure what the little three means. Catch, measure, and cover. Okay, there you go. So now you've solved the problem of how do I know when I've got 2 cups of lemon zest without having to disassemble it and put it all in a measurer. And no, I won't need quite as much checked luggage space as I need now. So I thank you. I think you're absolutely amazing. It says here the blades are made in the USA. Now, some of the other parts are not made in the USA?
That's correct. Our blades are made in Russellville, Arkansas, which is where they always have been made. And president of our company, Chris Grace, actually married a woman who is from Mexico. And so as he was in the early part of his marriage and she was missing her family, decided to open an assembly plant in Mexico. So
That
plant is fully owned by the Grace family. So it's not, we don't outsource that production at all. Much of Sandra, that's Chris's wife, her family works there. So it's our facility, so it's like an extended part of our family. But their job is to package and assemble the products. Not all of them. We still do a lot of assembly in Russellville as well. But as the line has grown, our facility in Russellville has not grown just because there's not the capacity. So some of that has been moved over to our plant in Mexico.
Well, it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, could I mention another thing is that you have an excellent PR program. Of course, I'm crazy about Julia and have been for a long time. But what I love is that ingredient of the month where you get to use there's a special tool and she picks the ingredient of the month and then emails us all out and how to handle it with that. With the tool.
Okay, so we're a loyal American household. We have every single one of Microplane's products, and when you come out with a new one, we're going to get one of those too. And and we thank you for helping to make us that. But we also thank you for the inventiveness, the constant inventiveness of your company in helping to improve what might seem like menial tasks, but which are important, and doing it right with the right kind of tools saves a lot of time and energy. So thank you on behalf of all of us out here in America land, to all of you in Arkansas and all of you in Mexico who make this happen. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Tracy. You're most welcome, and we appreciate your support. Thank you so much, and we'll keep sending you new tools.
And another kitchen.
That's right. And a few Band-Aids.
Oh, thank you so much, Tracy.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And don't go away, because the Malaysian food ambassador is coming right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Now, I think I'm going to stab at this, Christina. Your last name is Iroquois Sami, and I'm hoping that's right. Oh, good. And you are sort of the face of Malaysian and the voice of Malaysian food in the United States. You are called the Malaysian food ambassador and also a spice expert. But now you explain to me, your book was called what, in 2008, the shot to the top of all the lists, and NPR named it the one of the outstanding cookbooks of the year. And what was that called? The Spice Merchant's?
They call the Spice Merchant's Daughter.
In which you were.
Yes. I wrote this in a memoir form, both a collection of recipes that I've enjoyed in Malaysia, recipes that I've taught my clients to cook here in the United States, and the memories in the kitchen and spent around my spice home in Malaysia with my mother and her family.
Now, it's a very complicated cuisine, Malaysian, and it frequently gets mixed up with, Indian and so forth. And it's not. It's very distinctive. Could you tell us what are the characteristics of Malaysian cuisine?
Actually, in Malaysia, it's not very complex at all. It's not very complicating. For people who do not realize or do not know where Malaysia is located, this is a beautiful country on the equator, which is a sandwich between Thailand and Singapore. And you had a lot of history with this culture, with this country being located at right at the Malay Peninsula. It received a lot of traders from different parts of the world that came and voyaged at one time. And these traders came from India, from China, from Java, Indonesia, from Saudi Arabia, from Portugal, and they bartered here. So eventually this became a home for all these people. So today when you go to Malaysia, the minorities or the ethnicities that are, that form Malaysians would be the Malays, Indians, Chinese, it could be Portuguese, and also people from the land of Java, and they've settled here. So just like this rainbow of people, you have the similarity of foods. Our food is a reflection of the cultures that have come to live in this country. So when people ask me first time, what is Malaysian food? Is it complicated? My first question is that Malaysian food is a combination of Malay, Chinese, and Indian, and they are borrowing of ingredients into the same pot, and that's what you taste. You taste a very eclectic dish, and it is a dish that suits everyone very happily in their palate.
We did get some samples, and we tried one of the cooking sauces that was actually a curry, but it was supposed to be four peppers, very hot. And actually, I didn't think it was, I was a little worried about it, but it was not that hot. But it was, you could taste all the different spices in it, so it had a depth of flavor, but it didn't burn my tongue.
Oh, I'm so happy it didn't burn your tongue. Yeah. You know, we just had a media dinner in Los Angeles, and just yesterday, a writer, journalist from the Los Angeles Business Journal, he tasted the curries and the sauces from Malaysia, and he said, I could taste the future. I taste the future, and it's spicy.
Uh-huh.
So I think spicy is good, but it, like in Malaysian food, spicy is good, but it's not the kind of spicy. Malaysian food is not the kind of spicy that would burn your mouth.
Right.
No, I would describe it as a very well-rounded flavor. So it's
absolutely, it's very robust, well-rounded. It's very citrusy yet robust because we use a lot of aromatics like ginger, lemongrass, the citrusy kaffir lime leaves. We use galangal. We use, which is so, it smells like freshly cut roses. So all these beautiful aromatics are inside the kind of food that we cook on a daily basis. And so it is just a very, it's very aromatic, yet it's very complex and full-bodied food.
I get a feeling that the use of coconut has a lot to do with smoothing out the flavor in the same way as Thai cuisine uses coconut. Am I on the right track there?
Yes, it is. They say it's the big sister to olive oil, you know, because coconut milk is extremely healthy for you. It's medium chain triglycerides, so it does not, your body doesn't think of it as food. The body thinks about it as fuel. It burns as you eat. So it's such a great energy converter in the body, and people who have diets consuming of unprocessed, all organic, natural, unprocessed coconut oil and coconut milk have a very, very healthy diet, and they're lean, and they've got good skin, and they've got radiant health. It's because these are all health foods. And one of the things that people love about Malaysian food is that it is super healthy for you. The more you eat, the healthier you are. And there's not much fat. We don't use salt. We don't use sugar. We live on healthy grains, legumes, vegetables, spices, herbs, and all natural coconut milk and coconut oils.
Yes, there's a big, I think they call it the Battle of the Oils. People like Carrington Farms battling coconut oil's benefits against olive oil's benefits. I don't know who won.
I think that both are nut-based oils, and, you know, they are so good for your body. They are no trans fats or anything like that. These are medium-chain fatty acids, and they're so good for you. Coconut itself, I don't know whether many people realize coconut milk itself has lauric acid, and it is something where you get, which is closest to mother's milk. So even in Malaysia and in Southeast Asia, many families feed their children coconut milk very freely. Babies, infants are consuming it, and it is so healthy for you. Yeah, it's so healthy for you, because if an infant can consume it, you know, why can an adult? You know, it's that's good for such a delicate stomach.
Well, you know, we just came back from the food festival in Canada, and one of the stands was selling green coconuts with straws, you know, for the coconut water, which I happen to love a lot. Although I kind of, they were trying to put rum in it, yeah, but I like it better with scotch.
You know, I love that green coconut water.
Me too.
It's one of my favorite, and they make very pina coladas as well.
Oh, good.
Now, the wonderful thing about this is that I guess there are a variety of suppliers of Malaysian, I guess, ready-prepared sauces and things like that you can quickly get up to speed with Malaysian cuisine. For example, last night I used a curry sauce from Brahim, I think, and the recipe was really simple. It's called saute the chicken for 5 minutes, add a quantity of this wonderful curry sauce, cook for another 10 minutes, and you're done. And you have a wonderful exotic and not all that spicy chicken curry that we not only enjoyed last night, we also enjoyed it left over for lunch today.
I had it for breakfast too.
You had some for breakfast too. And it seems as though there are a lot of convenient products like that, some of which you demonstrated at the Fancy Food Show recently. So there's one called...
Isn't it wonderful? I think personally it's wonderful that people can literally taste this value-driven, easy-to-make, authentic Malaysian food from their packet to their plate, you know.
Right.
Because really it takes, the purpose of this Malaysia Kitchen program that I am an ambassador for is to introduce Malaysians food in its cuisine, its products to the United States, so people can enjoy it in their homes. But for many people who do not are time-strapped cooks and they don't have the time to chop and cut, they can literally just buy these packets of beautiful rendang like I sent you, which is lemongrass and coconut sauce. And just imagine that being that kind of sauce, lemongrass and coconut over your chicken. Oh, my goodness, that's dinner made in heaven.
Now, you have a recipe here that is interesting, and I want to mention it, but then I want to ask you a question. It's called Easy Grilled Prawns and Baked Salmon with Laksa Paste, featuring Malay Tastes Laksa Paste. Now, I sense here that there is one ingredient which is native to Malaysia and one ingredient that's not. I wonder if listeners can guess which it is. And
one of the ingredients that's very, very unique, and it's only to Malaysia. It's called the torchy ginger.
What I was trying to get across is that I suspect that the diet in Malaysia itself is quite rich in seafood, because you're never very far away from the sea when you're on this peninsula. But salmon don't swim by.
No. Salmon don't swim by. We get a lot of salmon, like in the United States, we get so much of different products. You know, nowadays you can live in Papua New Guinea and still get products from Mexico, let's put it that way. So in Malaysia, people do enjoy salmon. In fact, we get fresh salmon from Norway. And here in the Pacific Northwest, I am so blessed with the abundance of wild, fresh Alaskan caught salmon and halibuts and all these, you know, beautiful fish that come by season. Now we have wild-caught sockeye.
Oh, yeah.
And many people don't realize that there are many ways to prepare fish. just, you know, besides putting it on a cedar plank. And I think one of my favorite ways is to take this sensational laksa paste, which is made with ginger, you know, lemongrass, torch ginger, galangal, which tastes like perfumes, a little bit of cumin and curries, and you just smear this so very gently over your salmon, drizzle a little bit of coconut oil or olive oil, and it goes right into the oven, and you can bake it for 5 minutes, and then you broil it for another 3 minutes, 7 minutes, and your fish is so extremely, incredibly delicious. And I think that's dinner in less than 10 minutes. That's amazing.
That's very good.
Now, there's another sauce we got, which is a brand name, I guess. It's called Lingham's Ginger Chili Sauce.
Uh-huh.
Tell us about that one.
I love Lingham's is a very wonderful brand that Malaysia is, that is made in Malaysia, and we are very proud to promoted under this campaign. It was started with a young Indian man who came to Malaysia, and he had a dream in this Newfoundland that with 4 ingredients, chilies, vinegar, salt, and sugar, he could create and concoct this delicious lingam sauce. So when they first started this lingam sauce, the bottles were sent to Buckingham Palace to commemorate the Queen Elizabeth II's silver jubilee, diamond jubilee.
Yeah.
And the Queen wrote back and she said, thank you so much, and I hope that lingams could support the armed forces. So what lingams did is they sent beautiful, you know, bottles of this lingam's chili sauce to the soldiers who stood on the front line and protected the country, and these are the British Armed Forces. So today, the British soldiers look back and they can still remember this delicious sauce that they were able to dip their food in, you know. They were able to dip their breads and all the kind of food that they ate into this chili sauce. So the brand has become global, and it is so loved by Americans. It's a sauce, literally, it is like the ketchup of Malaysia. You can put it on eggs. You can stir fry it with your food, with mushrooms, tomatoes, chicken. You can use it as a marinade on any sauce, any chicken, fish, turkey, beef, anything. Barbecue with it. And it is absolutely delicious. And Whole Foods, 220 stores carry them. Asian markets, and many places are carrying them. And it is all natural, no preservative coloring, no flavors, no additives are used. Just the same 4 ingredients that they started with in 1908.
Now, Christina, is there a website for the campaign where people could find the different possibilities for the sauces, the prepared sauces, and also where to get them?
Yes, yes. The listeners can go to www.malaysiakitchen.us, which is malaysiakitchen.us, and on our website they can journey with, buy the products from Amazon, see where products are listed. These are delicious Malaysian products and beverage products that are all natural. Then there are also cooking videos, which I'm teaching on how to use the rendangs and how to make satays and how to make stir-fried prawns and all things that are delicious like mango salads, you know. And they can also look at the amount of recipes that we have. It's a lot of things that they can follow through on our website. It's very colorful, very lively, lots of great products, and people will love it. It's malaysiakitchen.us.
Well, you make a fine ambassador, Christina, and thank you for talking to
me. Oh, and, you know, it's such a pleasure. Thank you so very much, and for, you know, having me on this show. It's such a pleasure to be here, and I just want to thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Christina.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
And we've been cooking with some of the fascinating Malaysian ingredients that we've gotten through this program that the Malaysian Food Ambassador is in charge of, and we're really enjoying them, aren't we?
Yes, and it's been, as you said, Peter, I mean, it's not exactly new, but what's really new is the world radar is now focusing on some Malaysian recipes and characteristics of the cuisine.
And can you imagine, just to give you a teaser, a mild curry mixture that enhances the flavor of fish? Not something you'd expect, but it's there in Malaysian cuisine and in the products that you can get. So anyway, that's all we have for this week. We'll be back with another interesting program a week from today. We hope you'll join us again, same time, same place. And until then,
bye-bye.